Great. So I'll start out and we'll do this like a real meeting. So those of you that are still that still have your microphones on, if you can just hang in there. So welcome to our Midtown Phillips August board meeting. And I don't think that we have anybody here that needs an introduction. Everybody knows each other, right? I think. Yep. And if we get somebody in, we'll just do a quick update. So welcome everybody. I did send out this agenda by email, and we have Bart here.
Jennifer, already been a Jennifer, somebody's got a rate. Jennifer, somebody's got a radio on, and I can't hear a thing because I'm hearing a radio.
All right, I'll mute people out here.
I am too. Did we figure it out?
I'm muting people, so until they speak, when Bart will be our first speaker, so I'm going to leave him on. Otherwise, I'm muting everybody else. So it should be fine.
But I'm still on. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't know. Again, just remember, I'm coming to you by satellite. I don't know if I'm very severely lagging, but I'm sorry. We'll have to be patient for that. And so, yes, Bart was down at number 6, and we're going to move him up. I also need to ask if you also happen to see, I had trouble typing the July minutes, and I sent a bunch of emails out to forward them, and I just added in today's email the minutes. I don't know if anybody's had a chance to look at them. If there are any questions about it, email me. I had to put them back together again at the last minute here. Is there anybody who's willing to take minutes tonight?
Well, we're recording it, so that can take the place of minutes. We've been posting them if we want to.
Okay. I think it's just really good to make sure that we send out something that we said we'd do. But all right, I'll just try to take a few notes, and we'll. That's what I wondered about, whether recording it stands for minutes. So welcome everybody. And we'll just move ahead with this agenda. And Bart, welcome. We're hoping to hear about the utility box installments.
Okay.
Oh, wait, Bart, did you get muted? Okay, can you speak?
Can you hear me?
Show us that he's there.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. All right, so yep, the utility boxes are done. And I can tell you a little bit about the last phases of that. I gave a sort of interim report in April, I think. And that was after the whole process of putting the call out for artists and choosing the artists with the panel, the committee that we put together. And then after the partners, the artists had worked with community partners, and we had the artwork. And so our committee, which was like me, Sunny, and Pastor Patrick, Cindy from Banyan, Brendan from Waite House, Coach Abdul, and maybe one other person, I don't know. And so we all came together and we approved the artwork that the artist had made. And we asked for a few changes to be made in them, and the artist did that. And so then we sent that on to the Minneapolis, the public arts staff. And there was a whole bunch of things going on with how the city was changing with COVID. And so the public arts staff basically decided everything for us, I feel like, because the art commission wasn't really up and running as much. So they approved our artwork, or our application for the utility box wraps, and with some contingencies. And so in the report, I just gave a report to Sunny. You guys will get it. They don't have it yet, right? Sunny?
I forgot to unmute myself. No, I have not shared it out yet. Yeah. I know we wanted to just work out those last little number details. Yeah. So, yeah.
Right. Okay. Cool. Well, the report's all written, and then we just had some contingencies that we had to do, some weird things that they wanted us to do. And so we did, we got permission from like all these people who had their faces in it. We got permission from an artist who did a mural at Mercado Central because we used a photo of that mural. We changed some other photos also that didn't fit in with what they wanted. So after we did that, we resubmitted it, all the changes to them, and then they approved it. And then from there, you have to get encroachment permits for to do the installation of the utility box. And so we got all of those. That was pretty easy. And after the encroachment permits, we needed someone to prepare the boxes, like sanding and cleaning them, because the vendor that we worked with, Vamela, did not do that. And so Sunny called Thor. I don't even know Thor's full name. But
Thor Bjorn Adam
after
Scandinavian name.
Yeah, who's really awesome and was so great to work with, and he fixed up the boxes really well. And Vamela was very picky, and we had to sort of negotiate about like what would be good enough, and they didn't. Anyway, it was fine. And then between like the July 16th and the 27th, they put them on one by one over the course, and they look really great on the wraps. And then Sammy Johnson was the one artist who was going to paint the box, and originally she was going to do it with Banyan Youth, but because of COVID, I talked to her and Banyan, and they just decided that it would be fine for Sammy to paint the box without the youth and just use their design that they had made up with her. So this is them. These are the, yep. It was a really great process, I feel like, with the community and the community artists and the community organizations and the artists. It took a long time. We've been working on it for a year, so it's quite a feat. The city was really happy with the way our process worked. I thought it was a really stellar process that we used, including the youth and community organizations. It had lots of bumps. It wasn't smooth, but it was, it happened.
I think they turned out really nice. The first one is my favorite, but I think they all look really good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did you have any? Thank you, Jana.
What's
Thank
going
you,
on?
Sunny. Yep. Okay. Did you have any trouble doing this with some of the encampment problems that we've been having?
We didn't. I was a little worried about 16th. One of them is at 26th and Bloomington. And I was a little worried for the person installing it because it was not so great right then. But there were no problems. The only physical location problem we had was that we were going to install one on Lake and 13th. And that box got damaged in the last like couple months. So we had to pick a new location. So the one with the flower and the person hugging and the camera, we moved that to 28th in Chicago because it was another eligible box, and I got permission from the city and changed the encroachment permit. So that was the only change while we had to install. But the encampments didn't bother it.
Are there any other things that are outstanding that we need to do to wrap up, or is this now just completely done?
Good question. So we have a couple things. There's one more. We're going to be under budget. I mean, the board approved 10,000 for this project, and we're going to come in at 93 something, I think. But we have to pay, Vomela still owes us, we still owe them sales tax. And we have a check request in for that, like $222. So that needs to be sent to, like, written and sent to them. And then Sunny and I are working out how we're going to let the public know in the alley. So we're going to do some kind of article slash ad about the project to let people know.
And I see Jana. Sorry, Jana, I think you had your hand up, but I see you in the chat. You have a question?
Not a question. I just wanted to say they look great. They really look great.
Yay. Thanks.
It's like I just kind of want to print them out like a poster, and maybe we should print them out like posters and hand them out or sell them. They look great. Thanks, Bart.
Good. Thank you. Thank you all. Thank you, Jana and Sunny, especially for just giving me the opportunity to do more cool, more youth work and work with community, bringing some positivity to the neighborhood.
And Bart, the checks are cut. I just need to get Sunny to sign them.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
And that includes great. The Vomela check, Bart. So.
Okay, great.
Yep. And the reimbursements have been really slow from the city, but we got one of them in. So we have 10,000. So it's not the reimbursement from this project, but we still have cash flow, so we can go ahead and pay it.
Okay.
And I mailed Sammy's check today.
Great.
But that had already been budgeted, Jana, from like months ago. I just was withholding it because she was about 2 months behind the rest of the artists. So, but we're all good. All's well that ends well. All right. Well, thank you, Bart. I appreciate
thank you
coming on.
You'll get the report too, and you can look at it. So, okay. Thanks.
Great. Thanks so much. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
So we got Jana. Yes. Okay, great. So then the next thing actually, Jana, that I have on the agenda is the finance report. And I know that you sent out one. Can we go from there?
Yep. Am I unmuted?
Jana?
Yep, you're unmuted.
So there's a couple of things we need to do tonight. One is, Sunny, I'm wondering if you can find the CPP budget, not this, this is not, but the budget that's part of this, yes, that. So the first thing, I'd like to make a motion to approve the June financial reports that came out and were emailed around. Robert got them done, I think, last week. If there's a second.
I'll second it.
Back to you, Jen, for the motion.
All in favor? Yes. All in favor of accepting that it's the whole financial report? Is that what you said, Jana?
Yep, the June financial report, it includes the profit and loss statement and the balance sheet.
Aye.
Okay. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Or raise your hand. Wave your hands. Sorry, we're doing, yes. And any opposed? I don't see anybody. Okay, so those are approved. Go ahead, Jana.
Okay, the next thing that you see up on the screen is this is the budget breakdown from our community participation contract. And when we did our 2020 budget, we made a motion, and this is with our prior board, that we would move money out of the staffing line item into the outreach line item. And that's then how we chose and funded our outreach partners for this coming year. And so I think what was on the agenda was to move $60,000 from the staff line item into the community outreach line item. And if that's not enough, then I'll come back with another motion. But again, this was it's just sort of a technicality because we'd already done it. We already selected our outreach partners. But the city wants us to make another separate motion to adjust our contract budget. So I would move that we take $60,000 out of the staff line item and move it to the community outreach partnership line item per our motion last December or November, whenever it was.
So that would be number six. We're going to move from is it two to six or is it three?
I'm not sure what you're asking.
I think it's line, isn't it?
I'm asking which line the number of the line.
Look at the budget.
Okay, one.
Look at the budget. Excuse me. Look at the budget balance under the first line. It says 90,081.13. That's the staffing line item. Nope, Sunny, you're highlighting them all. It's just the very last one. And so what we voted on when we set our 2020 budget was to take $60,000 out of that and put it into the community outreach partnership line item, which I think it just says outreach partnerships, line item number six. So my motion is to move $60,000 out of the staffing line item and move it into the outreach partnership line item.
Is there a second?
I'll second it again.
And again, this is just a technical thing because we have already done it when we moved the motion before we even put out the request for partners and all of the work that we've done. But the city never revamped our contract, and so we have to do it again.
Okay. And is there any discussion? Okay, I'm not hearing any. Probably. I just wanted to make sure there wasn't any final discussion. Joanne is muted, but I guess, and a lot of people are here, I guess. So let's do, again, waving your hand, all in favor of the motion to move 60,000. Please wave your hand. And I can't see, there's
Jenna, okay. Jenna doesn't have a video
did we lose Joanne?
Yep. I'll vote yes.
Thank you, Joanne. Okay. Any no votes? Any abstaining? No. Okay. So it's been moved and passed that we will move that money.
Okay.
So Jenna,
I have two more things. So the next thing that I will send around that we got in the, can you guys hear me okay? So if you remember,
yes.
Like the city has, am I muted still? No. The city has not, you know, with all the budget cuts, they're having some substantial hits to a lot of departments. And so the Neighborhood Community Relations Department, which funds neighborhoods, had to cut 15% out of their budget, which is $750,000. And they sent out an email last Friday, I think, it could have been yesterday, and said that they were looking at the NRP fund balance and that they would be taking their recommendations to take uncontracted and non-spent money from the to the NRP policy board in September or October. And so this is just a point of information because once they post that policy board meeting, I will send around an email and people I would encourage people to jump onto that meeting and listen. A lot of us are advocating that they not take money that was already awarded to neighborhoods. And we're trying to build a case for that. And as it gets developed, you know, we'll send it around. But this is new information, so nobody's really had time to work on it yet. But I just wanted to give everybody a heads up. You know, we have uncontracted dollars out there. And so that's not good news for Midtown Phillips. So we're going to want to down the road probably oppose it. And then on the agenda, there's $2,000 for Abdi, but I got to tell you, I don't know what that's about.
Okay, that was me, and it's because I got an email from Abdi, and I'm going to just pull it up. I need to look on my phone and make sure that I get this. So if you could hang on half a second, that's where, let's see. Okay, he contacted me. He said he wanted, he was trying to get a hold of Joe, and he said, this is Abdi, and he wanted to talk to me, and then he wanted to know when he would get his $2,000.
All right, so well, I would, this is Jennifer,
Abdi, Rob.
Yep, Jennifer, I would ask you to send it to me and Sunny, because I am not aware that he's done anything as an outreach partner. So we can put it on the agenda for next month and use this month to research it. Sunny, have you heard anything or seen any reports?
No, who is Abdi?
Abdi was the organization in Central Neighborhood that had reached out to Joe, and we ended up awarding him a little bit of money, but I have not, I don't even think we have a signed MOU from him.
Is that the basketball
and
people?
It's Youth Association.
Yes, Jennifer, just as I know we're getting some delay, but Sunny, it's the basketball group at Central Neighborhood, but I don't know. So we should see if we have an MOU from him. And then we should reach out to him and see what he has done on behalf of outreach in Midtown. Because remember, that was our big concern as to whether or not there would be outreach in Midtown or just in the Central Neighborhood. And this is a Midtown outreach initiative. Okay. So I don't know. I'm not aware that anything's happened.
I definitely haven't received a report.
Right. And so I happen to have my Midtown folder here, and I just pulled out Minnesota Youth Association, Midtown Phillips. And it says $2,000. And so we do have, there is an MOU for this group. And
but
I'm
is
glad
it,
that you
is
said.
It, is it signed? Jennifer, is it signed?
You know what? The second page, I don't know if you can see me, but the second page is blank. And so this
right.
is something so I don't know.
So you need to, so
put it up
if we don't have a signed MOU, then that, you got it, Sunny, huh?
Yeah.
Okay. So then he just needs to contact us so that we can get a report from him and find out what he did for Midtown Phillips. And then we'll bring it back to the board in September. It's not automatic money. There are outcomes per that MOU of what is expected.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'll reply then. I'm really glad that I have a pretty clear answer. He was totally vague with his email. It was like a two-sentence email. And I had to tell him that I couldn't call him. And so I do have to do this by email with him. So I will ask him if he has a report. Can he do his report via email, or does he have to come to a meeting?
No, he can do a written report, but I would point out to him what they said they would do for Midtown Phillips. Because if none of those objectives are met, then that needs to come back. You know, we'll have to bring that back as a report next month.
And that would be these bullet points right here.
Right. Because it's not free money. We're paying people to do outreach for us. And we haven't, I haven't heard a thing from him all since this started.
Well,
was talking to Joe, but Joe emails me back and forth about crime issues, and he hasn't said anything that he's been outreached to at all.
Yeah, okay, thanks. This was very clear, and I have the MOU, so I can refer to it, and I will continue my conversation with him and ask that he get a report to us by our next board meeting so that we can approve that. Does that make sense?
I wouldn't say so we can approve it. I would just, you should forward him to Sunny and I so that we can go over the expectations again and then be able to get a report, because if you look at those MOU criteria, you know, I'm just skimming at them when Sunny had it up. We'll see.
Okay.
We were a little worried about this because it was a central organization and not located in Phillips, but we thought, maybe there is some outreach, and he said he did some outreach to Midtown Kids, and so, you know, we took a chance, but all the rest of the outreach people are calling us and checking in, telling us what they're doing, sending photos, so, you know, we need to kind of have a discussion, I think.
And if I recall, the conversation was that he said he does recruit, you know, in Midtown Phillips. And so he had some youth from Midtown that, you know, participated.
Yep. That's what he said. So if you look at the MOU, it asks for specific things back. So we'll be able to tell if we can get all those things, you know, reported back on.
Okay, that's great. That's really helpful, because I had no clue. He kind of, like I said, his email was really, really brief, and I wasn't even sure he came out of left field. I wasn't sure what he was talking about. Jana, and is there more that you can give us?
I think that's it for now. You know, the hot button item is to kind of follow what happens with the NRP money in the next couple of months. Sunny has up on the sheet. Sunny, you want to put that back up? So this is a little tool that the city finance department and Carrie Day Aspinwall and I made years ago as a way to reflect all the different contracts we have and what the budget balances are in them all. And so if you guys, if we send this around, you wanna print it off or just look at it, if there are specific questions, we can actually talk about this next month, but I would like to have specific questions from people, but anything where it says, so NRP 3, if you go three like columns down, that's the CPP money that we're using now. The finance department calls it NRP 3. Mayor Ryback wanted a new name for it, so then it was named Community Participation Funds, but it is still tax increment dollars, so it continues to be the money that funded phase 1 and phase 2. For the phase 3, we went to the legislature with Karen Clark and got the vote for them to allow the city to extend and to recertify tax increment districts. And that is how we got the phase 3 money. And one of the things that we're gonna use when we fight this is that it wasn't the city that got the money. We went to the legislature and got the money, and then the money came from the state back through the city, back to our neighborhoods. And I don't know, some of you guys might remember that in 2018, the tax increment dollars did so well that we had $50,000 more than projected that came in. And without talking to neighborhoods and without talking to the NRP policy board, the the policy board, our there are neighborhood organizations that are represented on there. There is the state legislature, the city council, the mayor's office, the unions. It's a multi, the county, there's a multi-jurisdictional group that monitors NRP plans. And anyway, by state law, if they use any NRP money, they're supposed to go to the policy board, and they did not. And so they put $20 million into an affordable housing fund and $1 million into the navigation center. And quite frankly, nobody wanted to fight that because there was such a need. And so we just sort of let it go. But then they put $13 million into Target Center buyback and said that, and somehow we're, you know, validated that it was a neighborhood revitalization purpose. I don't get it, but they did. And so part of the argument is that, you know, you've already taken a lot of money from us that could have made us self-sufficient for the next 10 years. So I don't know where that conversation will go, but it'll be something to watch because, you know, if you look at the balances that we have in phase one and phase two, you know, that's a little bit about an amount of money that could carry us along for quite some time. So that's all. That's
and
it, Jim.
So the question, the question that I have is then, if those are the funds that that NCR is saying that they're going to have to reallocate, so do we still have the $100,000? Is that still something we could contract?
So where are you seeing the $100,000 so I know where to look?
I added phase one and phase two, 44 and 74.
They would take that money. That's what they're looking at is uncontracted dollars. Hmm. And there are some neighborhoods that haven't even allocated their dollars. They haven't even, you know, they haven't identified a purpose for them yet. In phase one and phase two, all the dollars were allocated in our plan and the plan was approved. There are a few neighborhoods who are still a little behind in some of their plans, but we would lose those dollars. And so it's important to advocate for that.
So that would mean that our home ownership assistance program would totally go?
So right now, when you see the different line items that the money is assigned to, so good question, Joanne. So in NRP phase one, they still had $14,943.49 left, and that was dedicated to home ownership. The $8,000 from the Multicultural Arts Center, that actually came back to us just a few years ago because we had put money into the Franklin Theater. And when it was sold to PPL, one of the agreements was that we had to get NRP money back. So all the neighborhoods got money back from the sale. And so that's a pretty recent. And then the identify uses on unbuildable lands, that is really recent. That happened in the last year. It's not like we've been sitting on it. That money was money that we negotiated to get back from Hennepin County when they sold the CPRO site to the park board. We had them go through and audit all their NRP funds, and any of the physical funds that were left went to the park board with the sale, which would be a future discussion with the park board once they prioritize CPRO site to do something with. But this money was actually program money. And so that was allocated to actually do program on the CPRO site and Hennepin County gave it back to us. And then if you look at phase two, you can see that there's home improvement revolving loan money that we never allocated to anything yet. You know, we did the $75,000 for the revolving loan fund and the $75,000 for the emergency fund, but we wanted to see how they went. And so we still have housing money left, which we desperately need. And so I would hate to see that go anywhere. And then if you look down at NRP phase three, that's our CPP money. And we probably will pretty close to spend that down this year. You know, it's $72,000 a year and our partnership money and all of that, we might have $20,000 to carry over if they let us, maybe. We'll see how it goes, but usually we spend down the CPP money. And then the very last column was a request for proposal that came out several years ago, and Shirley Heyer actually wrote a grant. It wasn't called the Community Initiative Fund. It was called the Community Innovation Fund. Shirley wrote a grant to build the Somali radio station, which is Cali Radio. And we were awarded the $26,000. They built the station. They billed us, and we paid out $26,000, so there's no balance on that. But it was a really good project and is still operating to date and still one of our communication partners.
That was a good explanation of what this is all doing. One of the questions is, if we decide to roll some of this money over into an existing contract, is that complicated?
So we don't have an existing contract at this point. CPP money, at this point, they do not allow CPP money to be rolled over into the CPP 2020 contract at this point. They could authorize that with processes, and then any money that we have left over from CPP, which is NRP phase 3, could roll over unless the council takes an action to take it. The above actions, NRP phase 1 and NRP phase 2, that money could easily be contracted into our NRP plan. But the halt's kind of put on it right now because the NCR department is looking at taking it. So I have talked to neighborhoods that have requests in with community votes to contract their money, and they've actually been told that they aren't going to do contracting. Some neighborhoods have contracted their money. It's just sort of all over the board. I have to say that I don't know. It's kind of confusing right now with the NCR department. We don't hear a lot from them. I'm sure I could check in and ask Araya what's going on at some point, but it's probably better to wait until the policy board to see what's going on. We wouldn't be able to even have a community meeting to move any of this money yet. There are requirements, you know, you can move $25,000 by the board with a 21-day notification. Anything larger than that, you have to post to the community, hold a community meeting of what you're going to do and where you're going to contract it. And so, and if you look at phase one, those are things that the park money, you know, that's supposed to be for the park. And the cultural arts center, we had once said it'd be for Heart of the Beast, but it depended upon whether or not Heart of the Beast stayed in the neighborhood, and because they were going through this period of time where they didn't know if they were going to stay or not. So that's why things are assigned to different contract. If you look at our plans, different areas in the plans that we approved, and those plans, they all go through the NRP Policy Board, then they go through the City Council Community Development Committee, then they go through the Ways and Means Committee, and then the full City Council votes on them, and then they're published in Finance and Commerce. And so I'm almost thinking we need a lawyer, because I don't know how they can just take money that they've already allocated to neighborhoods.
But we do have lawyer services with that one firm.
Yeah, as somebody that's contracted with NCR is not going to fight NCR. We almost need to find somebody like East Phillips did who will challenge the city.
Fair enough.
Can we use our funds to pay for an attorney?
We cannot use NRP funds to pay for an attorney, no.
No, okay.
But we could do a GoFundMe or find a pro bono attorney.
Mm-hmm.
I know Donna's going to get to this a little later, I think, but Longfellow sent us a letter, and there's a list of things that Longfellow Neighborhood is asking for more information and for neighborhoods to be at the table about, because neighborhoods citywide feeling really frustrated that they've been left out of conversations. And when we get to that point, they want us to sign on to the letter. And maybe this is something else we add to it, because Melanie at Longfellow wrote her letter before this email from Rubidor came out.
Are there any other questions? And so, Janet, any final wrap up or recommendations for your report?
Nope, I'm good. I would just be open if anybody has any questions. I can do email or phone call, because I know this is kind of complicated, so I'm more than happy to spend the time responding to people if you got questions.
I was just wondering if, so great, those monies that have already been allocated for, like, the home improvement funds that we've been working on, like making advertising to the community, those would be taken away as well. And
so the money that we've already contracted with CEE, those are contracted funds, so no. The form that Sunny had up on the screen is money that's been allocated to our various NRP plans for us to spend. There is no end date by the state statute to spend those monies. But the council's looking at it, seeing $30 million across the city that isn't spent yet, and they think that will be a good fix for some of the budget crisis, not realizing that a lot of neighborhoods are working with libraries or schools or parks or public works, and their project is dependent upon a city department timeline. So it's not like people are just sitting on their money. Everything's been pushed back with COVID, and with the latest civil unrest and everything that's going on. And so it's just, in my opinion, really unfair.
Yeah, I'd agree with you.
And so that was kind of behind my question, was wondering, we already have this contract with CEE, and wondering if we can roll this money into an existing contract. That was what I was referring to, we already have that, and we would love to use it for housing, I suppose, if we could, if that's what the neighborhood wanted. Is that possible since there is already a contract?
So let me check with Bob Cooper to see what the process would be and if we could just do it. And then I'll email everybody, and maybe that could be an action in September. It would take some sort of notification, I'm pretty sure, but I'm not completely sure, because things doesn't seem like everybody follows the same rules. And so let me check.
Thanks. That would be great. We just would end up having more to work with there, and we wouldn't necessarily lose the money. And so then, if that's our finance report, I wanted to move to Donna to do some talking about our diversity. I have called it different things.
The East Lake.
Reading the book White Fragility.
Oh.
We can start either way. You have two things for us, I'm hoping.
Yeah.
On Lake Street, and one on diversity. So do whichever one you want to do.
Okay, well, I'll start first with the East Lake Street thing. The East Lake Street cooperative, as Cam Gordon has given us that name. But anyway, we've had two meetings since this last board meeting. And the one we had about 3 weeks ago was like a total disaster, I thought. But I think that we actually got something out of it, and I didn't even write any minutes on it, because all the people that were there, Brad and Carol and Melanie from Longfellow, myself, Wayne Bogg, another person from East Phillips, and maybe another person, but anyway, we were all like talking to Sean, who is the head of that committee, the development and inclusion committee for redeveloping East Lake Street and other areas of Minneapolis that got destroyed by the riots. Well, anyway, we were all talking to Sean, sort of a pylon, I think, because she kept saying, well, what do you want? What does the neighborhood want? I'll bring it to the committee. And we kept saying, we want representative. We want representation at the table. You know, not all of us, but like somebody there representing us. And then she got sort of pissy and, you know, she left the meeting. Mm-hmm. But and we kept going. We kept talking. Anyway, so I thought, oh man, what a disaster. Is this going to happen? You know, are we going to, you know, be a force to reckon with or what's going to happen? So then at this meeting today, we had a meeting today. And it went a lot smoother. It was a lot smaller, but it went a lot smoother in that I gave a report. Jennifer, I think I sent you the minutes of that meeting.
You did. I got okay. it.
I emailed yeah.
Do you want those to go to everybody?
What?
Do you want those to go to everybody? You can just send them to the whole board. You know, they didn't have to just go to me.
No, you can send it to the rest of the board if you want. Or do you want me to? I don't care. I can
do it. Okay, I will.
Okay. Well, anyway, so I gave a report on the mayor's press conference about this committee. And a lot of people on the committee were there, the core people. And they were gave us a report on what they were doing. And much of it, every even breakout group was dealing really with getting the community involved, finding navigators for people that lost their business so they could help them fill out forms or, you know, apply for grants and stuff like that, fundraising, and that kind of thing. And so they reported that. There were some questions about it. Some press people asked the mayor questions. He talked a lot about, he talked a lot about community, getting the community involved. And I was just thinking, oh my gosh, you know, if he's talking about getting the community involved, why aren't we involved? Why aren't the neighborhoods? So I was just watching this. I couldn't ask a question. It was done on, it was put out on August 6th. But so I gave a report on that and I put a lot of that information in the minutes. So I'll send that out. But anyway, it boiled down to, we wanted to send a letter. So we're going to send a letter to Sean and the mayor and a bunch of other people that are involved with this. And we're going to, Jana and I are going to get together and write a letter. But in the meantime, while this meeting was going on, Jana got a text from Melanie that said that Sean had invited her to be on this committee. So I guess we did reap some good things out of that meeting that I thought was a disaster. So we got somebody at the table, so that's good. Our next meeting is gonna be the 20th. And there's more details to this last meeting we had today, and I'll send everybody those minutes. So, okay.
Great, yes.
So do you want me
Thank
to do
you.
That?
Any questions for Donna?
So Donna, do you wanna also, before you move into, the diversity piece, talk a little bit about Melanie's letter. Did you see that?
Oh, yeah.
Because that's a second piece about Lake Street and other stuff.
Right. And Sunny, I think you put that up on the screen, didn't you? Somebody did. But Melanie would like the neighborhoods to sign on to this letter. And I would like to move that we do this, because, you know, I just...
And I'll second it.
We're actually making a motion and seconding right now? Yeah. Is that what we have?
Yes, I move that we sign on to this letter.
And I seconded it.
To Mayor Fry and the City Council.
So, and this is a letter from Longfellow Neighborhood, and they sent it out in an email. It might be on the Midtown Phillips list. It looked like, I'm not sure, but it went to all the neighborhoods up and down the area, but it also went to other citywide neighborhoods. And she's asking that on rebuilding Lake Street, that neighborhoods have a place at the table. On deciding the future of policing, that neighborhoods have a place at the table. When they're talking about funding and allocations, that, you know, who are the community-based folks that would get money, and would neighborhoods be eligible, since, you know, part of the logic with that is that neighborhoods put their NRP money into Lake Street to revitalize it in the first place. And then coordination among elected officials. Everybody in different jurisdictions keep pointing fingers at everybody. I mean, Donna spent two meetings trying to find out what was going on Lake Street, and Sean was at both of them.
The only time we found out about what was going on when I looked on the video that Jana sent of the press conference that the mayor and this committee gave. That's the only time I found out what was going on.
Right. And I didn't even know the press conference went on. There was no press release to neighborhoods. Somebody that is a volunteer for Loring Park found that on the city's website and said, hey, you'd probably be interested in this. This is about Lake Street. You just said that you never hear that anything's going on. And so then I just sent it over to Donna. And then the whole community engagement and racial equity pieces kind of roll into 2021 funding. And those of, you know, I work in a neighborhood, Melanie works in a neighborhood. We just really, there hasn't been much conversation since COVID started in March. We haven't really heard anything from the city, from NCR, from the health department. And now when these big things happen, all of a sudden it's this top-down thing rather than grassroots up that we're used to. And nobody hears anything. And all this, to look at this YouTube, and I think I posted it on my Facebook page, but I'll see if I can get a link and send it around. But, you know, they've got eight work groups already and steps and action steps, but nobody, like, and the businesses keep emailing me too, asking if I know what's going on. So even the reps on that high up committee aren't talking to the businesses because they're not knowing what's going on. The Lake Street Council has been asking for help because their capacity is tapped. So I think that coordination upon elected officials also is communication, because it's just not happening. So basically, right, the whole letter is about, don't forget neighborhoods. We need to be at the table. We're the taxpayers. We're the users of the businesses. We live here. We pay your taxes, sort of a letter.
A good example of that is the chamber guy, the regional area, Minneapolis regional area guy, he was saying that he's trying to find spaces for the businesses that have been, you know, that are not on Lake Street right now because their businesses have been destroyed. And he said that he found some at Mall of America. And I think that, what's that restaurant? Gandhi something?
Gandhi Mahal, yeah.
Gandhi Mahal.
Yeah. And they found a space in South Minneapolis. And Brad wants a lot of businesses have approached him and said, well, what about that Sears warehouse you're fighting for? You know, it's in pretty good condition. It could house a whole bunch of businesses, and he would like to see that happen. But, you know, we've just been, like, blown off. Mm. And they're looking for places.
So there's a motion on the table. Donna moved and Jana seconded that we sign it. Donna, maybe you could, Donna or Jana and Donna could sign it for Midtown. Is there any discussion?
So you wouldn't sign it?
If you're in favor of the motion? Okay, physically I can't for you. I mean, I don't know. You can type my name at the bottom and send it, and I'm happy to do that. But physically I can't do that. So it's up to you. Can Jennifer, it just be typed on there?
So let's just type Jennifer's name to it.
Yeah.
But you're the president, so we could type the name to it, or Sunny, if she's the secretary, could sign it as the secretary. But I think it'd be good to come from the president, or both of you.
I do too. I think it's better to come from the president.
And Rand was the secretary, actually.
Oh yeah, that's right. Sorry, Sunny.
Yeah, but Sunny could sign it, and there just could be a tag on approved by Jennifer that asks them just one sentence saying that she approved the signature.
I don't, you know, the ones that I send by email, I mean, is this going to be snail mail or email? If it's email, then it can just be typed.
Yeah, it's going to be email. They might even just like type in, if all the neighborhoods sign on, Melanie might just type that on the bottom. Say, you know, Midtown Phillips Neighborhood Association, Inc. / Jennifer Nagelak, president. She may not even ask for signatures.
Yeah.
I'm good with that. That's fine. But yes, physically, I can't help you. It would take forever.
Joanne, you're cutting out. Can you say that again?
What?
Is there a way to electronically sign?
I could sign a piece of paper and scan it and send it. But, you know, like I said, the other things that I send, I just have signed them. Typed in my signature and sent it. So I think that will probably be adequate. You can just do that. Go ahead and type my name on it. So are there any other questions? If that's all, then if you're in favor, please wave at your screen. We have a motion. We're voting. Yep. There we go. And thank you. Oh, okay, there don't seem to be any opposed, and so no one abstaining. So yeah, you guys can just go ahead and do that. For me, that would be great. You've got it already electronically there. Go ahead and go for it. Donna, do you wanna move into the diversity training?
Yes. And before I do, I just want to clarify something. Jennifer, do you want me to send those minutes out to everyone, or do you want to?
Why don't you do it? It just puts another layer, you know.
Okay.
You're doing them. You just send them.
Okay. All right. Today I'm going to talk about how to be an anti-racist. It's a book that was written by Ibram Kendi, and I believe he's a professor. I wish, I can't remember from where, but, and also for full disclosure, I didn't read the book yet, but this is taken from a video that I watched at an Aspen Institute event in which he gave a presentation, and a lot of the people there ask questions. So anyway, I want to take his thesis and compare it somewhat to Angela D'Angelo's book, White Fragility, that I talked about last month. But she has a different definition of racism, but yet I think they're both sort of symbiotic. Her definition is that racism is an ideology that's reinforced by textbooks, political speeches, movies, holidays, all kinds of things that are in our culture. And that white in our culture is the norm, and that white is assumed to be superior. And so that's what she calls racism, because this causes inequality in society, and inequality is also obscured in our culture. So, but these are the pillars, according to her, that hold up racism in society. Now, Ibram Kendi has a little different take on racism. His description is a more systemic one. He describes racism as a collection of racist policies that lead to racist inequality that are substantiated by racist ideas. So an example is Jim Crow laws or the repeal of some of the voting rights laws. And he says, anti-racism is just the opposite. It's a collection of anti-racist policies that lead to racial equality that are substantiated by anti-racist ideas. Like, for instance, the voting rights bill that was passed in the Johnson administration, or the Supreme Court decision in the Brown versus the Board of Education. So D'Angelo sees our ideology as the pillars. As the pillars that hold up racist policies, and Kendi sees racism as policies that were originally put in place for power and economic reasons. Then the ideologies or the ideas follow that. Like, for instance, the criminality of Black men or the inferiority of Black people's intelligence. These were ways white men kept and held power and or wealth. In other words, the policies came first, and then the ideas or the ideologies were passed down. So I can see both definitions of racism at work in a symbiotic relationship. So Ms. D'Angelo's ideology or pillars are used to hold up racist policies, and Mr. Kendi's racist policies theories came first in order to create wealth and make racism legal, such as like slavery. And then in order to hold on to power, and then the ideologies were created, written about, taught, put forward in society in order to keep the policies in place. So Mr. Kendi says that white supremacy normalizes whiteness, much like Ms. D'Angelo, who said, quote, white is the norm in which everyone else is measured. And Mr. Kendi says that white people don't have to flex their muscles in order to get the benefit of the doubt in society. And more comes to white people with less work. So from slavery on, those most brilliant in society were the ones that produced racist policies to make them money and to get them power. When you have to defend these policies, you have to produce racist ideas. therefore, he's saying, according to him, that racist policies do not stem from ignorance or hate, but you know, from greed, from the desire to have money and power and status in society. So race, and then he goes on and says, racial progress is always followed by racist progress, or in other words, pushback, such as Reconstruction was followed by Jim Crow, or Obama, for instance, was followed by Trump. So racism always figures out new ways to suppress people. Voter ID laws are far more subtle than poll taxes, for instance. This is somewhat like D'Angelo's writing about how racism morphs in society in ways we don't even recognize it in ourselves. He said that D'Angelo's theories, he agrees with her in that it's hard to talk about race because so many of us refuse to recognize it. So however, he also said that people are complex. It's a complicated issue. Some of us are anti-racist when it comes to health care or education, but we're racist when it comes to the criminal justice system. So he made the point that white people benefit from racism, just like D'Angelo made, and probably why racist policies are hard to repeal. And then he, I thought this was really interesting thing. I thought about this myself, and also if any of us have read the book What's the Matter with Kansas, which is not quite about race, but it's how low-income people vote against their interests. Well, he's saying that white upper-income people, for instance, try to convince middle and lower-income people to vote for racist policies, even though they don't benefit the middle-income or the poor, only the upper-income, as a result, white people are dying of whiteness, he says. So he surprisingly also addressed the issue of upper income blacks who also support these policies. Many upper income blacks and middle and lower income whites are misled into choosing racist policies that hurt them instead of all of us getting together and working toward equitable policies. And then he talks about his own upbringing, that he was brought up in a middle-class black family. And he's a black man, by the way, and he had to deal with his own racism toward poor blacks and black women. So internalized racism, he says, is a real black-on-black crime. And he said there are two kinds of racist ideas. There's a segregationist that just out and out say black people are inferior by nature. They're born and bred in primitive Africa or broken homes, and you can't civilize them. And this is, in a way, this is sort of, is about like what D'Angelo talked about too, in that, okay, we got rid of most, except for the white supremacists in our society, we really got rid of most of that kind of racism with the civil rights. And then it morphs though. And he talks, and she talked about it morphing, but he talks about a racism that liberals have embraced, and it's in the form of assimilation idea. And it's one held by many of us liberals. So the boomers who were involved in the civil rights movement are sort of, a lot of our generation is sort of got a pedantical attitude, sort of like an idea like, well, if we teach them better ideas on how to parent or how to keep their yards in better conditions, they'll become more like us. They'll assimilate. And that's another form of racism. So, and then he talks about that most of them were taught, most of them in the Black middle class families, or maybe even the lower income Black families, that if they just behaved better, white people would accept us. But that never worked. If a Black person acts in an upstanding way, he says, we just say to them, oh, you're extraordinary, or you're exceptional. You don't act like other Black people. And we're almost surprised if they do really well. So in other words, instead of just accepting that they're human beings that are doing well. And the politics of respectability, he says, has failed. And those people trying to live up to white's ideals feel like they carry the weight of their whole race on their shoulders. Somebody from the audience, I did watch the question and answers and took some of it into this presentation, but somebody said, like, do we have any chance of making progress? And he said, absolutely yes. And one of the examples he gave was slaveholders were the most powerful, and they were the richest people on earth at that time. And in 5 years, they were gone. So I'll end with that.
Very thorough. Thank you, Donna.
You're welcome.
Oh, you're muted, Jennifer. There you go.
I had asked if there were any questions, and I had said, thank you, Donna. And so, yes, we'll continue. Are you willing to continue next month with another installment?
Yeah, I will, unless someone, I will open it up to any of you guys if you have any ideas. But if nobody wants to take it, I will.
If anybody has any ideas or suggestions, get with Donna. Just do that directly. And she can either keep going or abdicate to somebody else. Just work it out with Donna. Great. Thank you very much. I have written down here Jana's request that I got an email for, but I think we did that. Is that true, Jana?
You should be unmuted.
It shows muted on my screen that she's muted.
Yeah, yes. She's muted.
I hit unmute though, so I don't know why it's, I think it's on her end.
Maybe she needs to unmute herself.
Here she goes.
So I'm looking at the agenda. I'm not seeing anything, so I'm not sure what you're asking. Sorry.
You had sent me an email, but I think, and I wrote it down here. It may not even have been on the one I sent out. You sent an email, and I think it was the last thing that we did in your finance report. You're all taken care of?
So I don't know. Send me back the email. I can only prepare for what's on the agenda. So I don't remember.
Yeah.
You know, I have thousands of emails that came in this last month. I don't remember. Sorry.
Right. Okay. And sometimes it's hard for me to find. Oh man, I have to look at my phone while I'm doing.
I don't want it, Jennifer. I don't want it right now because I haven't seen it before the meeting. I don't want to have to react to it. Just send it to me at your convenience. Does that make sense?
You had asked about the LCC Executive Committee meeting members signing on to the memo. That's what you're asking.
I don't Yeah, I just send it to me so I can look at it, and then Don and I can talk about it. If I don't see it in advance, I can't prepare for it. Sorry, I just looked at what was on the agenda today, so I don't know.
I may have actually found this in my email after I wrote up the agenda. That's
okay.
That was just yesterday at 2:30. Yeah.
That's okay. Just send it. Just send it back.
Okay. And then the other thing that I had put on the agenda was a board participation question. We have a board member who has not attended meetings for quite some time, and it's over half of our year has gone by, and I don't know if we just want to, because of COVID, just let this ride until our annual meeting, or if there's anything else that we need to say about it.
You could probably maybe send a letter and ask if he's still interested in being in the board, and then copy it to everybody, because who knows what might be happening, between the COVID, and then also, he's involved with the mall on, 12th or 13th Avenue, and that sustained a lot of damage, I hear. And so it'd be good to hear from him and see if he's doing okay.
That sounds good to me. I just didn't want to ignore not having somebody come for the whole time. So that I'm fine with that. Are there any other requests about it?
I'm wondering too, if we could, somebody, maybe you, Jennifer, could send an email to Misty. I'm missing her. Just say we miss you. She hasn't been here for two times in a row.
Well, I think she was at the last meeting. I think she joined a little
bit.
Oh,
was she?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. I guess I didn't see her.
She was also at the community meeting for Senator Hayden as well.
Okay.
So
all right.
I'm pretty comfortable with that. Okay. And then just to further on, you guys need to know, I have limitations up here, and you need to know that I'm going to be here in a large degree through the fall. I intend to come home briefly for a while. I had really only intended on kind of giving you guys about a half a year. We've been doing these Zoom meetings. I know it's a little crazy. And so I want you to know that I'm behind. I did not do what I said I would do at the last meeting. I don't have very good internet, and I have almost no phone. I can only call by satellite unless I travel into town. So this is just your notice. I won't be able to be on the board certainly next year, and we should continue to recruit. We need to find some people. I love to be involved in my neighborhood stuff, but I can't be super dependable. So I can report that I did get an email from Sorensen about CEE and the fact that they are going to work on, we have to actually request very specifically translation. And then I will do my best. I will see what else I can pull together to see if at our next meeting we can address the rest of the CEE, the loan stuff, especially if it's possible that we can shift our uncontracted funds, just shift them into housing so that we don't lose anything. So I hope that made sense. Does everybody see where I'm sitting here? I just want you to know that I can't commit to next year, and that I hope that you'll let me hang in here till the end of the year, but I can only do so much.
And Jennifer, I just want to say, I think you're doing a fine job. If I'm sounding crabby, it's not crabby at you. I'm just kind of crabby at everything right now.
Great. And I have to admit, I am horribly spoiled here. I am enjoying where I am. Those of you that see my Facebook pictures, it's just lovely. And I have my grandbabies, and I'm really loving it. So mm-hmm. It's not that I really am very connected to Minneapolis as well as I can by what I can get when I have coverage, internet coverage. So thank you, and forgive me for being behind. I'll see if I can catch up. Do we have any specific? Go ahead.
I'm just wondering, if maybe before we end the meeting, if John could give a report on his lot, because a whole bunch of work has gone into it since the last board meeting. And I think, like hours and hours and hours, and it would be a good thing, I think, for John to report on what happened, because it would help other people in their areas maybe,
Sure.
I also just want to ask when the meeting is over and Sunny stops recording, I'm wondering if people could stay on for 5 minutes so that I could talk to people outside of the meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Is that okay?
That should be fine.
Fine with me.
Yeah, and then I was gonna ask for updates, and I was also going to ask for new business, or do we have enough on our plate? Okay, and Joanne, I don't know what you know about the 24th and 13th. If you want to jump in after John, that would be great. Go ahead, John.
Good news is the lot was cleared of all campers. People were given a week's eviction notice. I witnessed most of what was going on as did other people during the day. All observations, people were treated respectfully as they were being moved. Little bit of a brouhaha came after the initial removal. Yes, Donna was there. When a group of activists decided to surround the last remaining tent, which was occupied by a young man who's quite well known in the neighborhood. I know him by name. Young fella, severely mentally ill, who was afraid to leave his tent. And when a police officer and a neighbor who has a relationship with his trying to gently persuade him to leave. The sad thing was this poor fellow would have been taken immediately to a hotel because of his disabilities. The activists surrounded the tent. The police decided they did not want to arrest the activists who showed up because that's what they wanted. So this fellow stayed on the lot with the act. And Donna can verify this if she watched what I watched. The so-called activists after the lot had been cleaned, deliberately went out of the alleys and streets and trash bins to refill it with garbage again as part of their statement of what they believe. And when questioned on it by neighbors, responded, well, if you don't like this, you shouldn't live in a low-income neighborhood. Apparently, this is the new left. Low-income people are supposed to live with garbage and squalor. That went on for about a week. Was it Tuesday, Donna?
Yeah, I think they were there for about 5 more days.
Days, yeah. Tuesday, yeah. Friday, a gentleman from Guild Incorporated who has basically the so-called activists were holding the gentleman hostage. Nobody saw him exit his tent. I mean, I kept an eye on him.
Yeah, I don't know why they thought that was such a noble thing to keep this poor man homeless.
Yeah, because Friday of a week ago, a gentleman from Guild Incorporated came in a truck, and he knew the gentleman, knew he had housing lined up for him, and he basically just told the activists on the lot, I'm taking his tent and wait until he gets here, and we're moving him. And they started the usual name calling, how we were all, but where we gentrifiers. Several neighbors went out to help at that point and made sure that the guy from Guild could do his work. while we were called gentrifiers and why are you living here? You know, you don't belong here. Get out of the city.
Most of us have only lived here 20 years or more.
I am not exaggerating when I have never seen such a well-dressed, privileged-looking group of young people enter this neighborhood. I am not making this up. One was arriving routinely in a BMW. Several people witnessed that. They're taking a summer break to teach us how to take care of ourselves, I guess. Anyway, after that little brouhaha, and the gentleman who was left on the lot, not as far as we know, has been housed in a appropriate group home that, where you can get better care. The police came. Tuesday of last week, right, Donna? Yeah.
Yeah.
Again, removed everybody, took away all the garbage. Everything went fairly peacefully. A lot of name calling, of course. And a fence went up.
And they put axle grease on the posts.
Yeah.
So they couldn't pull them out like they did the first time.
Yeah. So all has been quiet since then.
John, you should, that Donna just raised a point. You should say what happened to your fence post the first time.
Oh, the first time, after the first remover and clearing, the activists yanked up the fence post and somebody came by in a truck and drove away with them. I don't know who these people are.
They're a bunch of privileged white kids from the suburbs.
Oh, I was standing there on Tuesday across the street talking to Donna's sister, Catherine, and one came by and said, well, the lady who lives over there yells at people in the lot. And I said, yeah, people in the lot yell at my kitchen windows all the time. And he says to me, well, that's what happens when you move to a low-income neighborhood. And I says, well, you're complaining about being yelled at, can't I? You know? And he called me a gentrifier, and I wasn't witty enough to think of anything besides throwing an F-bomb at him. I wish I had my wits about me more. But
well, the whole thing was, it's like they wanted the homeowners or the people that lived in houses around them to be absolutely perfect. Every time we called the police on the WhatsApp, somebody on the WhatsApp said, one of the do-gooders, you know, wrote, why are you calling the police? Don't call the police on these people, which were the drug dealers, you know.
Yeah. To my knowledge,
they wanted us to not do anything. Yeah. But these guys, they could be junkies. They could shit in our alleys. They could, you know, leave their needles all over for our kids to step on it. Oh, but that's okay. That was just fine with everybody.
We know that the tents were being used to hide girls that would be in traffic. I witnessed that. Several people witnessed that. It was, yeah. And to my knowledge, nobody ever called 911 on anybody who was actually camping there. The 911 calls were for the criminals on the street.
Right.
And several neighbors have reported that people were quietly leaving the camp. People who camp in there, contacting, talking to neighbors that they recognize, saying, please call 911, we're scared and we can't call, you know? The dealers totally took over. The dealers were running the lot. As a matter of fact, a woman I know from church is in Northeast, and there's a small encampment at a park near her house, and she's been visiting there, seeing if she can do anything to help. And two of the women living in that encampment said they were on the camp on 26th and 14th and left because they got so scared of what the dealers were doing there.
We were scared too, weren't we, John? I mean, I was. It was violent. It got crazy.
It was insane. It was totally insane. The whole process was insane. The amount of effort it took for the neighbors to get any action done was totally insane. I had to quote, I mean, one instance came, I had emailed somebody in the CPED office saying that something has to be done, and he got back to me saying the governor's order says we cannot move these campers. And I got back to him quoted line and verse, no, the governor's order, whatever it is, -20, you know, section such, verse so-and-so says, in these events they can be moved. I mean, that's what the law says. And it really annoyed me that somebody who's being paid by the city of Minneapolis either doesn't know the law, doesn't know what the order is he's supposed to enforce, or, as I feel, openly lied to the neighbors because he didn't want to do his job. But anything, everything is quiet now. We're watching the fence carefully. I mean, we're making sure nobody breaches the fence. The neighbors have told CPED we absolutely need to have, whatever happens to this lot, if it's to remain empty, it needs to be fenced. We need a more secure fence than the one that's there now, but it's their responsibility to do this. And we want input in what happens there. There's absolutely no excuse for that lot to be sitting in this neighborhood empty for 15 years, I understand now, causing trouble summer after summer after summer. For one thing, the city never picks cleans it. Myself and my husband used to go out a couple of times a week with trash bags to clean the trash up on it. I've never seen a city worker come by to do that.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's the update there.
Joanne? Yeah, thank you, John. Yeah. Joanne, do you have any news on the 4th and 13th?
Not really.
I think are you unmuted?
I think I am.
Yeah, you're unmuted. I can hear you.
Okay. Not really. We're still, two cars were stolen right out in front of my house yesterday, like literally right in front of my house, and neighbors. One was recovered, and then just as they left with the owners left with the car, another person had come to visit and just left his keys in the car. And the person who stole the first car stole the second car, and he's from the encampment, but you know, can't do anything about it. I really am irritated that it's a get out of free jail card to live in the encampment. You can do whatever you want. You can shoot up, you can steal, you can, you know, destroy property, and we can't go after you because you live in a homeless encampment. The police officer that came and talked to us after the first car was recovered said that, you know, people think that, you know, that the perpetrators are going to get some serious jail time, and they said they get no jail time. There's no repercussions really for the people who steal the cars. And he said, until there are some, you know, they're just going to keep doing it. And what's unfortunate is they tend to steal the plates of these cars, and people have to pay for their car to be fixed or for the new plates. And it comes out of the pockets of taxpayers who have elected people who think it's okay for these people to get off scot-free.
Yep.
So it's really frustrating. As far as we're still seeing a steady stream of people back and forth using in the alleyways, and you know, the majority of it is coming from the encampment. What's unfortunate, I mean, it was fortunate in some ways that the encampment was across the street from so many seeing neighbors, but the other encampment is across the street from the Waite House, where there are only people there some of the time. And then there is an Indian like garden area behind.
Yeah.
So basically there are fewer eyes to see what's going on there.
Mm-hmm.
There was a fence put up and it was taken down, and then they put up another fence, but they had complained that there was only one opening. So they have cut several other openings to get in and out. And then there is literally a tent that's supposed to be for donations, but I really think it's where they shoot up. And they put a curtain across it so you can't see anything. You see people go in there and come out higher than a kite.
Mm-hmm.
So people are still frustrated and don't know what to do. And we're still seeing the rash of crimes going on.
Joanne, has anybody close to you or anybody close to you contacted a woman named Katie in the city in the CPED office?
No, I'm not sure. I would have
Let me send you. We started getting better response. One of our neighbors, the city's playing a real cozy game here, like trying to pass the buck. Oh, I'm not responsible. But there's a woman named Katie that one of our neighbors finally dug up her contact. And we started getting quicker response about things because CPED is responsible for all city-owned vacant lots. And the line we kept saying to her is, this lot is owned by the city. You are responsible, like, for the behavior of people using your property the same, any private homeowner, what you're gonna do. And we started emailing her with multiple emails, and several of us, once we got her contact, started phoning her 5, 6, 7, 8 times a day, leaving messages. Yeah. She was probably getting a good 30 messages.
And every time I called, every time I talked about the lot, I said, the city owned lot.
Yep.
And I also said that if we were running prostitutes and drugs out of our house, we'd be deemed a problem property. Well, I said, you guys are the landlords of the biggest problem property in Minneapolis.
Mm-hmm.
So you guys, I just want to enter in. I'm not sure the city owns that lot.
I believe
we need to look it up on Hennepin County and see who the owner is. And if it's the city, then follow their tactics. But if it's not, we need to go to that owner. And I just have the feeling that it's not the city, but I don't know for sure.
Okay. If it's not the city, it's most likely Indian Health Board, because they own the garden beside it. And they were the ones who developed it.
Yeah, that was my thinking.
But I think we need to find out. I was told it belongs to the city. I don't know by whom.
Well, and if it's the Indian Health Board, there's a woman named Tish Rivera Cree that has participated with our annual meeting and Clean Sweep and Open Streets. And her husband and I started our block club. Yep. And she works at the Indian Health Board. So if it's their stuff, maybe we can get a hold of Tish and figure out what to do about it. You know, we just need to find out who the owner is.
Well, and if they don't cooperate, then you file a problem. If the Indian Health Board owns it and crimes are being committed on the property, they need to be held accountable for it.
I think the most success is to put the pressure on the owner.
Yep.
If it's the city or the Indian Health Board, because let's find out, and Joanne, I can work with you doing that. If you can, and the deal is get a few neighbors to join in and CC emails, like, when we would email to this woman, Katie, we'd have 6 or 7 neighbors on the email too, so she knows coming. And like I said, I swear, she was probably checking her phone mail and finding 30 phone calls a day for a few calls from us. And we were just unreal. Yeah. And was like, we will keep calling you and keep flooding your mailbox until you do something. I did include a few times. And by the way, let me remind you, I pay your salary.
So, John, I also think a tool that worked effectively from my observation of all of this was when you sent the letter to the mayor and CPED about the attorney you were going to retain. It seemed like right after that, things shook up.
Yep.
Yeah, you should give her the give Joanne the name of that attorney too.
Yeah.
Joe Tamburino, wasn't it Joe Tamburino or something like that?
Joe Tamburino was the game of the chair. We never actually heard back from him, but I think saying we CC'd him on, and he's the fellow who's representing the Powderhorn neighbors who are suing the city right now. Joanne, let's.
And he also is a really well known attorney. And NPR always interviews him on criminal cases and stuff. And he is the downtown neighborhood crime chair and on their board.
Yeah. But yeah, let's talk about Donna. Let's you and me confer with Joanne sometime, like tomorrow evening, maybe, or sometime very soon. And there's no reason why whatever we did here, you should try doing, I think.
And we could all send letters. They don't need to know that we live a couple blocks away. If you don't have a lot of neighbors, we can all send letters.
Hey, it's three blocks from my house. It's a problem to me, too.
Phillips.
Yeah.
You know, not official, but I mean, we could say we live in Midtown.
Well, I go a block out of if I'm walking from my house to Aldi's in case to avoid it. That should be an issue.
Yeah. And, you know, there, Joanne is a block south. There are some people on the 2400 block of 13th, and I'm thinking of Heidi, Joanne, you know, that have been very, very much involved. And Yeah, I had thought I had heard that they were wrapping up both encampments at the same time. So I'm shocked to hear that they didn't do the 24th and 13th. So I'm very sorry.
Yeah,
we
that's
probably
what
we should wrap up. If you have agenda items for next month, please let me know. Email me. I don't remember what do we have. We're not having an August community meeting, right? Is that right? Nobody knows.
I don't know. Is Sunny still here?
Where'd Sunny go?
I think so. I don't know.
Did Sunny sign out?
So
if she signed out, the meeting would be over.
You know, it's still,
she was hosting.
It's still recording, though.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know what to say. It's my reflection that we don't have an August community meeting. And in which case, then we'll see you. But keep in touch by email. That's good for me. And I can do these satellite calls, but then you have to put up with the big delay.
Yep.
So we'll just say that our meeting is adjourned. If Jana, you wanted to talk, but if we're recording, maybe we can't.
Nope, I don't want to talk when we're recorded. I just texted Sunny and asked her, maybe she just went to the restroom.
She still must be in the meeting, because if the host ends the meeting, then everybody goes.
That's really, it's kind of weird.
Hang on a second. Let me check.
I don't see her anywhere.
She's not in the participant list either. This is very strange.
No. I know. Well, you guys, you are wonderful. I just want to tell you that I'm so thankful that you people are there doing the work that you're doing in our neighborhood. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much.
How can we stop?
Yeah, I think